Chapter 14. Buying Real Estate with No Money Down. A creative economy is the fuel of magnificence. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Believe it or not, you can buy real estate without spending any of your own money, and I'm going to show you how. In this chapter, I'll show you some of the techniques that I and others have used to build tremendous wealth in any real estate cycle. This chapter complements the traditional and creative financing techniques you learned in the preceding chapter. So, as you read this chapter, keep in mind that many financing techniques you just learned can be mixed and matched with some of the techniques you are about to learn. Sometimes borrowing money from a single lender makes sense. Sometimes borrowing money from several lenders may make sense. Every real estate transaction will be different. So, by understanding your financing options, you can choose the options that work best for you. Leverage is an asset. Leverage means the ability to spend a small amount of money for a large asset. The more you can use leverage to buy a property, the more money you can keep for improving the property to increase its value as well as for other investments. The main advantage of leverage is that it reduces or even eliminates the amount of down payment required to buy property. However, it also increases your monthly and total debt. If you plan on using high leverage, make sure the income from your real estate investment can cover your expenses. And also, make sure you have the ability and resources to make up any shortages if it doesn't. The basic idea behind buying real estate with no money down is to get creative. 1. You can find an alternate source of money to buy real estate. Or 2, you can offer something just as valuable and useful to the seller, such as submit your offer to purchase, specifying that the real estate agents carry all or a portion of the commissions on a note with an interest rate that is attractive to them. Tap the equity in a property you already own, either by refinancing or by asking the seller to accept the equity as part or all of the down payment. Have the seller carry a portion or all of the down payment. Use traditional and non-traditional loans and funding in whole or in part, as described in the preceding chapter. More creative financing techniques are available than conventional techniques. You just have to know what to look for and what to do with the information after you've found it. I'll show you my techniques, but I want you to develop techniques of your own because every real estate deal is unique. The greatest thing I can teach you about buying property with no money down is that there is no one and only technique. If you can buy property without using your own money and you do not over-leverage, you are a winner. How I made $100,000 in 45 days. Let me walk you through a deal in which I used none of my own money. I was driving home one afternoon when I saw a realtor putting up a sign across the street from a house I already owned. I quickly pulled over, spoke with a realtor, and found out that the sale price was $525,000. Now I asked whether I could take a quick walk through the home. I already knew that it was built in 2001, the same time as the one I already owned, and that it probably had similar features, so I was in and out in minutes. I asked when the house was going to be put on the market and where the owners were moving. From these simple questions, the realtor told me that the man who lived there had passed away, and his two children now owned the house, and one of his children lived out of state. The realtor was going to put the house on the MLS, Multiple Listing Service, the next day. This immediately sparked my interest. I knew the sellers were probably extremely motivated, but I also understood that they were going through a difficult time. I needed to let the sellers know that I wanted to help, and fast. Knowing this information, I drove across the street to my house, wrote an offer, and faxed it to the realtor. The exact letter I wrote was as follows. Dear realtor, here are my thoughts. I paid $525,000 for the house I own across the street, which equals $214 a square foot. This is a great comparison because it is directly across the street and the houses were built the same year by the same builder. My house has a lot more options and benefits than the one you have listed. At $214 a square foot, the house you are representing would be listed for $471,428. However, I know you need to go by what you can get and what supply and demand will allow, not by my house as a comparison. But this is what I am using as my basis. With that in mind, here is what I would like to offer. Sale price, $513,000. Seller concession of 3%. Sellers to pay 3% of the sale price, either to me or toward my expenses at closing. Because I won't bring in a realtor on my end, you could represent both sellers and buyer. With that, though, I would like 1% back from you at closing. I can have a credit line of approval faxed over this weekend. I can close in less than 30 days. I would take as is, no cleaning, no repairs, and so on. This offer might be a little different than most, but it is my nature to be creative. Thanks for your consideration, Dean Graziosi. Within an hour after talking with the realtor, I faxed over my offer. By that same afternoon, the realtor got back with me and said the sellers had accepted the offer. That was great news, because I knew that this particular area in Phoenix was still in an upswing cycle, heading towards the peak, but not quite there yet. I knew that the house needed a little care and could be flipped for a great profit. I called my mortgage broker, told him that I thought the house would be appraised above the asking price, and said I wanted to do 100% financing. I see no reason to use my own money when you have the opportunity to use other people's money. You may be wondering why the realtor would sell the house at a reduced rate and give me 1% back. In most cases, residential homes are listed at 6%. Typically, 3% goes to the buyer's agent and 3% goes to the seller's agent. My offer was a good deal for him because he could represent me as the buyer's agent. So he made a total commission of 5% after giving me 1% instead of 3%. In addition, he had spent almost no time on the deal and already had a solid buyer lined up. After the great news of the sellers accepting my offer, I hit my first obstacle. My mortgage broker found a creative financing deal and I got my approval for a 100% finance loan. But when the bank saw that the owners and the realtor were giving me a total of 4% of the sale price at closing, they didn't want me to get that much back and would not do the loan that way. In my experience, banks don't want you to leave a closing with too much money because they fear you already have a profit and may walk away from a property if trouble arises. To me, this was just a little bump that needed some creative thinking. Because the sellers had already agreed to the 3% concessions at closing for expenses or cash back, I went back to them and offered a new deal. I explained that the bank was not willing to do the deal with these concessions, so I asked them to deduct it from the sale price and showed them how they would receive the same amount of money. The sellers agreed, and I asked the same of the realtor, who agreed as well. Now we had a deal. Now the actual sale price was reduced by 4%, 3% that the sellers were giving back towards closing fees, and 1% from the broker. So, I was buying the house for $492,480. Instead of getting the money at closing, it would simply be deducted from the sale price. So, here's how the deal was structured after the obstacles were addressed. Because the house was appraised for so much more than I was paying, I went to the bank and got 100% financing for the purchase. This was an 80% first mortgage and a 20% second mortgage. I put $7,500 into the house before I put it up for sale. I installed new stainless steel appliances, slapped on a coat of fresh paint on the inside, and used my credit card to pay for all the upgrades. Then I asked a realtor friend if she would be willing to sell the house for 1% commission rather than the standard 3%. She agreed because she knew the house would sell quickly, reducing the time she would be investing. Often realtors will reduce their commission if you will accept only limited services, meaning they may just list it on MLS and put up a sign, but not spend any money on advertising or promotion. This realtor knew that when I get a house ready to sell, it has major curb appeal. I listed the house with her 2 weeks after closing on it. The loan did not have to be paid for 45 days after I closed. So when I sold the house within a few weeks, I never made a single payment. This is a perfect example of how you can make a fortune without having to come up with a huge down payment, as long as you know the cycle of the area you are investing in and use the proper strategy. When investing in real estate, it's important to have a backup strategy in case your first plan doesn't work out. Let's assume a worst-case scenario where I couldn't sell the house. The logical backup strategy would be to rent the property to cover the interest payment because it was an interest-only loan, plus property taxes, insurance, and homeowners association fees. This backup plan falls short because the rent probably won't cover the monthly costs. But based on the up market cycle, the odds were in my favor that I could flip the house quickly. What makes a deal like this possible? You have to be ready for an opportunity. When I saw the realtor putting the for sale sign up, I took action by approaching him and understanding the situation. When you find a great deal, you have to move fast. I knew the area and knew that the house was undervalued. I also solved a looming problem for the sellers. These factors allowed me to have an agreement with them just hours after seeing the property. The result was I walked away from the closing with a check for $109,000. After deducting my costs and expenses, I still profited more than $100,000 in less than 6 weeks without using any money out of pocket. How's that for incentive? The ABCs of creative financing. It really is as simple as A, B, C, and D to determine whether a property will fit into your portfolio of investments. To develop your own creative financing techniques, you need to do 4 things. A. Analyze the situation, price, property, seller, buyer, profit potential, and leverage factor. B. Be sure to identify benefits. C. Choose the right strategy. D. Develop a relationship with the seller or broker so you know the magic buttons. And I will add a 5th. Understand the market cycle. Every time you analyze a property and use your financing resources to set up a deal, the benefits of creative financing become more obvious. That's why I give you so many of my personal experiences and describe all the different ways and places where you can get money. Remember, I had never used most of my creative financing methods before. I didn't have a guide like you have to point me in the right direction. I learned these techniques through trial and error, by not being afraid to ask, and by thinking a little differently, so you get a huge head start. As you become more familiar with the strategies and techniques of creative financing, you will soon become skilled at choosing the right combination of resources to make the deal work for all parties. You'll have all the ingredients. You just need to know how much or which ones to use in a particular recipe. My intention is to give you so many ingredients that you can make any recipe and any purchase a reality with creative thinking and action. Be creative and the money will find you. In Chapter 13, you learned about traditional financing and some newer loan types that enable you to get 100% to 107% financing. Now let's look at some less conventional methods of accomplishing your goals. Not everyone reading this book will have the credit to obtain conventional mortgages, so they will need to find alternate ways to secure financing. If you want to become a successful real estate investor, you should learn how to use every possible financing resource available. If the deal makes sense, I do everything in my power to make it happen. Again, make a list of all your ingredients and mix and match them to come up with creative financing that works. By thinking a little differently and being creative, you can combine the right money sources that will benefit everyone. The most important thing to remember about being creative with financing is that you must never be afraid to ask. It always amazes me what some sellers are willing to accept just to get the property off their hands and to get a sense of security that they will be paid as agreed. Following is a list of additional or alternate financing resources. Seller carryback financing. Seller carried second mortgage. Property potential. Assumption of mortgages. Assumption of mortgage with seller carried second and bonus. Wraparound mortgage. Equity partners. Real estate agent and broker. Home equity line of credit. Whole life insurance policy. Personal property equity. Credit cards. Assuming the seller's debt. Promissory note. Distressed properties can equal flexible sellers. Seller carryback financing. Without question, using the seller as your financing source can be the easiest way to finance a property. And that's true even if you have the credit to go to an institutional lender. But seller financing is rarely the least expensive form of financing because you tend to pay a little more interest to entice the seller to hold the note. But when calculating a deal, if seller financing is available, it is usually the best way to go. If the seller is going to accept monthly payments instead of cash up front, he or she will want to receive an interest rate higher than what they might get through a traditional savings account. Seller-carried notes can be accomplished simply, just 2 people agreeing to the interest rate, terms, and conditions they want, drawing up the paperwork, and closing on the property. Although seller financing can allow you to purchase property with no money down, the interest rate will often be higher. But if you have no money or you do not have the best credit, you still may end up on the positive side when you calculate your traditional closing costs compared to using the seller as the financier. These calculations definitely come into play when you factor in how long you plan on holding the property. Seller financing can come in many forms, but it is usually a first or second mortgage on the property. For a seller to carry a first mortgage on their property, they must either own it free and clear, have no mortgage on it, or have a first mortgage that doesn't prevent the seller from creating a wraparound mortgage, which I discuss later in this chapter. Let's assume the property owner is having trouble selling a piece of property due to a down market and poor property location or condition. If the property owner owns the property free and clear, you can ask the seller to sell you the property and take back a mortgage on it. From the seller's point of view, the only drawback is that he or she won't get all their money at once. The advantages include making more than the asking price of the property due to the added income from interest, earning a higher interest rate than banks might pay if the seller put that money into a savings account, and having the guarantee of using the property itself as collateral. If the seller doesn't need the money right away, this method, known as carrying a note on the property, also referred to as the seller carries the paper, the seller holds the paper, or carryback financing, is a can't-lose proposition for the seller. If you default on your payments on the promissory note, the original property owner can take back the property and resell it. So the original property owner is protected while you get a chance to buy property for no money down. Now, I can hear you asking me, Dean, does seller financing really happen? All I can say is, absolutely. Suppose you've driven by a property for quite a while and have noticed it's been sitting vacant. You do what you can to contact the owner, or you ask your realtor to pull up the ownership records on the property and complete a comparable market analysis of similar properties that have sold in the area within the past 6 months. Upon getting the report on comparable sales, you discover that the property is owned by someone outside your state, and homes that are fixed up in the area are selling for between $100,000 and $105,000, depending on the amenities. You also find out that the ownership records do not indicate any mortgages on the property, and the records show the mailing address for the tax bill with an out-of-state phone number. Then, when you speak with the out-of-state owner by phone, you discover the property belonged to his brother who died 6 months ago. The out-of-state owner inherited it, and he just hasn't had the time or resources to follow up on the matter. He tried to rent the property once, but never received the rent on time, and his situation requires that he be able to count on regular monthly payments. You also find out that he will be going into a rest home next month and is in need of an extra $600 in monthly income to cover his monthly bill there. During the conversation, you convince the seller that you are a reliable source of the income he needs if he would be willing to accept $90,000 for the property and carry a first mortgage at 8% interest. That would give him what he needs, and you've just bought a property for no money down. This example may sound too simple, but similar things happen every day and for any number of reasons. Typically, seller financing works whenever the seller is motivated to sell the property, so they offer financing as an additional incentive. Just remember, don't assume that someone will not accept what you offer, and don't be afraid to ask. Real life story. Here's a real life example of mine. A wonderful older woman had recently become a widow. Her home consisted of her living area, plus an additional two apartments. She lived in upstate New York and was ready to move south to a warmer climate, so she needed to sell her home. This property was perfect for me to buy because I already owned the piece of land adjacent to it. Well, she put the house on the market for about $10,000 more than it was worth. And by asking that extra $10,000, she had no takers. I figured I would wait it out, and when she dropped the price, I would move in. But after some time, she still had not dropped the price, so I knew it was time for me to find out why. Because we were neighbors, I didn't have to introduce myself when I went to her house to get more information. I simply sat down and told her I had some interest in the property and would love to come to an agreement that worked for both of us. But I also told her that I thought the house was overpriced, and the fact that it was not selling proved I was correct. We had a great conversation, and she invited me back for dinner later that week. While at dinner, I did more listening than anything else. I found out that she knew the house was overpriced, but before her husband passed away, he told her that was the price she had to get for the property, and she wanted to follow his wishes. I also found out that she wanted to move down south with her daughter and son-in-law. She owed nothing on the house, she wanted security to pay her new mortgage, and having a lot of cash up front was not necessary. In other words, I learned her magic buttons. After putting all the pieces together and considering all my options, the same options I am teaching you here, I came up with an offer that pushed a few of her magic buttons while I asked for a few of my own. I said, I think we both know that your house is overpriced, but I understand your circumstances and why you need to get that amount. So, I will pay you the full price. She was ecstatic. I added, but I also want to make you aware that your property is not worth what you are asking. So, for giving you full price and satisfying the other things you need, I would like you to be flexible as well. Because you don't owe any money on the house and you're moving down south, I would like to buy the house with no money down. You can keep the property in your name, or you can be the mortgage holder. I'm going to start putting money into the property immediately to fix it up. So the worst that can happen is that you'll get monthly payments, and if I can't keep up the payments, you'll get the house back in a much better shape than it is now. Another plus is that you'll be getting the full amount of money you wanted. I asked her what amount of money she would need every month to feel comfortable, and it was very reasonable. I knew that the rents from the three apartments would cover that, plus some. To make a long story short, we agreed on the deal, and she sold me the property for no money down. In fact, it was her suggestion that I not even pay interest. And the best part is that I spent a few dollars renovating the place, the tenant's rent covered what I owed her every month, and I ended up owning the property free and clear. Seller carried second mortgage. If you want to buy property but can't come up with enough cash, ask the seller to carry a second mortgage. For example, if the asking price for a piece of property is $200,000, but you can come up with only $160,000 in financing with the first mortgage, ask the seller to accept a promissory note for the remaining $40,000. This gives the seller his or her asking price, and if you spread the promissory note payments over at least a five-year period, the bank will treat the promissory as a second mortgage. Keep in mind that the less money you can pay up front, the larger amount of interest you'll need to pay on the promissory note. Basically, the seller wants confidence that you will follow through and pay according to the terms of the note. If you are successful, you can purchase the property with a first mortgage plus a seller-carried second mortgage without using any of your own money. Property potential. Sometimes the property itself can be used for a portion or all of the down payment. If you can spot the profit potential in a property and can come up with a solid plan to make money, you can attract investors to contribute to the down payment. For example, I was shopping for property on which to build my own home. The property I found was raw land with fantastic views, but I had one obstacle. Because of other investments, I had little available cash to use as a down payment. However, by keeping my eyes and ears open, I had learned of two people who were looking for lots on which to build their own homes. So I made an offer on the land that the owner accepted, and with a small down payment and a contract, I was able to lock up the property for a month so no one else could buy it. I met separately with the two people who were looking for lots. I told them I was in the process of purchasing beautiful property with great views, that I was going to subdivide the property, and that I needed to raise capital. Then I offered them the following deal. If they would give me a refundable deposit on an approved buildable lot, I would sell it to them for 20% to 30% less than it was worth. We were pushing each other's magic buttons. I needed money and they needed land with a view. And I could offer it to them for a huge discount if they would pay upfront and have the patience to wait several months while I subdivided the land. One individual loved the property so much that he paid me in full for the choice of any lot. The other individual paid me 50% of the money up front. That was enough money for me to purchase the property. No banks, no loans, no hassles. Attorneys drew up contracts to protect their investment. It may have been risky for them, but there's no payoff without risk. Just pre-selling those two lots gave me all the money I needed to purchase the property, with some leftover to start the subdivision process. I ended up getting five buildable lots out of the property and made a fortune. So you see, there is no one set way to find financing and buy with no money down. It's all about thinking a little differently, being open to what is around you, and taking advantage of the knowledge you are about to gain. If there is a parcel of land you could possibly subdivide and sell, see whether you can find a buyer who would be willing to pay upfront or a portion upfront for a nice discount. Then use that money for the down payment on the property. Or maybe you can find a partner who would be willing to provide the upfront money because you found the desirable parcel. Maybe there's something valuable on the property that you can pre-sell. A friend of mine once bought land and then pre-sold the trees on the property for lumber. From the money he made pre-selling the trees, he got paid more than the cost for the entire property. How's that for thinking differently? Assumption of mortgage. I've explained how you can use seller financing with a promissory note to buy property with little or no money down. Now what happens if someone uses a no money down technique to buy property and then turns around and wants to sell it to you? You have two options. First, you can pay the property owner cash through a traditional loan or other source of funding. Second, you can assume the mortgage, which basically means you take over payments on the existing mortgage or promissory note. To reduce delinquent payments and foreclosures, most bank mortgages have due on sale and no assumption clauses. These two clauses mean that if you sell your property, you must pay off your entire mortgage. In other words, the buyer must create a new mortgage from scratch and cannot assume your current mortgage. So most assumptions and mortgages occur when the current property owner used a promissory note to purchase property. You assume payments on that original promissory note. Some promissory notes may include a qualification provision. That means if someone is making payments on a promissory note, they can't let someone else assume payments without the promissory note holder's permission. So, if someone bought property with a promissory note and suddenly wants to sell the property, you can assume their promissory note payments with the note holder's permission and purchase property with no money down. Assumption of mortgage with seller carried second and bonus. Next to using seller financing, assuming a mortgage is probably the most cost-effective way to own property because you pay no loan costs as part of the transaction. Let's say you found a property with an assumable first mortgage, but you have little or no cash available for the down payment or closing costs. You can assume the first mortgage, meaning you take over the payments on the existing mortgage or promissory note, and negotiate with the seller to take out a second mortgage for their equity in the property. As explained in the previous section, seller carried second mortgage. As an enticement to the seller to accept your offer, you can agree to pay an additional amount of interest over and above what the seller is currently paying on the first mortgage, as well as negotiating the second mortgage interest rate to accommodate the seller's needs. For example, suppose a seller has a property with a value of $140,000. The property has an existing first mortgage in the amount of $102,000 at 6% interest with a monthly payment of $612 that you can assume. When you negotiate the purchase, you would ask the seller to carry a second mortgage in the amount of 8% interest only and agree to pay the seller an additional amount of 1% of his or her first mortgage for the same time period of the second mortgage as a bonus for carrying the second mortgage, allowing you to purchase a property for no money down. The bonus would not be part of the second mortgage because it is an incentive to the seller to get creative with the financing. The benefits to the seller are as follows. $38,000 second mortgage at 8%, which is $253 monthly. $102,000 at 1% bonus, which is $85 monthly. $102,000 assumption, which is $612 monthly. Total payment, $950 monthly. The effective rate on this type of financing technique for the second mortgage becomes 10.68%. An easier way to accomplish this loan would be to just write the second mortgage for the higher interest rate. Incidentally, all the mortgages and the bonus you are paying go away when you refinance the property. Wraparound mortgage. Normally, when you buy property, at least one mortgage is already in place. Instead of qualifying for a new first or second mortgage or both, which can take a lot of time and include a lot of extra money in closing costs, some creative buyers use a financing instrument called a wraparound mortgage. Instead of paying off the original mortgage and getting a new one, a wraparound mortgage keeps the original mortgage, which the seller must continue paying. then you as the buyer make payments to the seller. As an alternative to paying the seller and trusting that the seller will use the money to pay the existing mortgage, you can use a third-party escrow company. You pay the escrow company, and the escrow company pays the seller's mortgage and sends a check to the seller for the difference. This type of creative financing does not require you to qualify with the current lender, but there is a drawback. If the existing lender finds out about it, they have the option to call the loan due and payable immediately. Sometimes they will just renegotiate with the new interest holder and keep the loan, or modified version, in place. But they do have the right to call it in. That lender's position and rights in the property override any agreement you may have made with the seller. A wraparound mortgage works particularly well with property owners who want to sell right away. In a wraparound mortgage, you can get title to the property in your name, depending on the state you reside in. But it is not a clean title. The original mortgage stays in the seller's name because you are not paying off the original mortgage holder. Until that original mortgage is paid, the terms and conditions of the original first mortgage cloud the title. It is important to mention again that if you ever consider using a wraparound mortgage to buy a piece of property, make sure arrangements are made to get the original mortgage paid on time. You never want to send the payment directly to the seller. Instead, use a title officer, a bank, or preferably a third-party escrow company. If you pay the seller directly and he or she doesn't use it to pay the mortgage, you could lose everything when the original mortgage holder forecloses on the property for non-payment. Any money, including monthly payments, down payment, repairs, or other work you have put into the property would disappear. And you couldn't do a thing about it because you would have been a party to the fraud carried out against the original lender. Additionally, many title companies will no longer allow the use of wraparound mortgages because of their increased liability with this type of transaction. As you can probably tell, this is not one of my favorite ways of financing property. I know you're probably thinking, Dean, why would anyone use a wraparound mortgage? Well, as the saying goes, desperate times give birth to desperate people. This type of mortgage can solve the immediate needs of both parties to the transaction. And if the monthly payments are made on time and everyone does what they say they're going to do, there probably will never be a problem. People with terrible credit or no money might see this as their only option. And if they are willing to take a calculated risk, it can get them into property ownership. Just make sure you are aware of every aspect in a deal like this. Equity partners. Let's say you find a piece of property that you know will make money, but the price is far out of your price range, such as an apartment building selling for $1 million. Although you may not be able to afford to purchase this property by yourself, you can team up with other investors and create a legal organization called a partnership or a limited liability company. Get 9 investors willing to invest $111,111 each, so each investor gets to own 10% of the apartment building. 9 investors times 10% apiece ownership equals 90%. Yet, 100% of the asking price has been paid. So where does the other 10% go? In your name, because you found and organized the deal. If you don't have the money, offer to manage the property. You get your 10% ownership with no money down in exchange for finding, negotiating, and managing the property. In return, your partners get a property manager they can trust because you also have a financial stake in the property. Real estate agent and/or broker. Real estate agents and brokers typically earn commissions ranging between 5 and 10% of the selling price, depending on the type of property listed. Residential property commissions average 6%, and commercial and investment property commissions average 8.5%. However, all fees are negotiable, and sometimes so are the terms with which a real estate agent will participate. If the agent doesn't need the commission immediately, you can get creative. For example, if the agent should receive a $10,000 commission upon closing, he or she might consider accepting a promissory note for $13,000 instead of $10,000 cash today, due and payable 24 to 48 months after the sale. The property will appreciate enough, 5 to 15% annually, depending on your area and the improvements made, to cover these additional costs upon refinancing or selling the property. You can even negotiate a discount on the note if you pay it off early. Basically, a promissory note to a real estate agent or broker lowers your initial upfront costs in buying real estate. Home equity line of credit. Your existing home can be a great source of investment capital because many lenders will lend in excess of 100% of the value of your home at attractive rates. When you borrow against your existing home, that's called a home equity line of credit, or HELOC. You should apply for the maximum HELOC possible because you pay interest only on the portion you use and not on the maximum limit. Let's assume your home is worth $250,000 and your mortgage with the bank has a balance of $180,000. That means you could get a HELOC totaling $70,000 from your local bank. Your HELOC would let you write a check for up to $70,000. If a deal comes up where a fast closing could save you a ton of money, this would give you readily available down payment money. New and seasoned investors alike can use this strategy for fast, convenient money. Many of my students, who thought they had no money to invest, used the HELOC to kick off their real estate investing career. Whole life insurance policy. In many cases, you can borrow a down payment against a whole life insurance policy at an attractive interest rate. If you don't own a whole life insurance policy, find someone who has one and offer an interest rate 2 to 4% higher than he or she would have to pay when borrowing against the policy. As an additional incentive, you could offer part ownership in the property, such as 5 or 10% ownership, payable at the time of the sale or within a time frame you both agree on. Personal property equity. Instead of offering cash, you may be able to offer a seller personal property for part or all of a down payment. Personal property can include stocks, bonds, jewelry, automobiles, boats, recreational vehicles, or timeshares. Anything the seller perceives as valuable. Don't assume a seller won't want what you are offering, and don't be afraid to ask. When you offer personal property, you have to negotiate with the seller on the value of the property you're offering. Offering personal property lets you use what you already own in place of cash while lowering your down payment. As an alternative to giving your personal property to a seller to lower your down payment, you can also use your personal property as additional collateral, which is called a pledged asset mortgage. Let's say you want a piece of property, but you don't have the cash to make the down payment, so you need to convince the seller to accept payments, seller carryback financing. Such an arrangement protects the seller because you're using the property as collateral. If you fail to make payments, the seller can take back the property. As an additional incentive for the seller, you can include your pledged asset mortgage as well. This tells the seller that if you default on payments, the seller can take back the property plus any personal property, car, boat, and so on, that you included as collateral. Credit cards. You can also use available balances on credit cards to generate the cash you need for purchasing properties. The use of available credit can increase your debt-to-income, DTI, ratio. So be careful not to overextend yourself and thereby disqualify yourself in the lender's view because your existing debt is too high for their guidelines. Also, be aware of the high interest rates most credit cards charge for interest. Still, you can use credit cards to provide additional cash in a hurry, which can be handy when other sources of funding can't completely cover the amount of money you need to close a deal right away. I know most people may cringe when I suggest using credit cards to purchase a piece of property or to come up with a down payment. I've used this strategy for years, such as for buying vacant land that I couldn't get a bank loan on. Typically, you pay a higher interest rate and closing costs on vacant land, so it was actually cheaper and easier to get cash advances on my credit cards or a short-term loan. Not everyone has $10,000 or $20,000 in cash-ready credit card limits. From having worked on improving my credit and from applying for a few high-limit cards, in my early 20s, I had about $40,000 available at any time. I had those high credit card limits, but I was disciplined enough to use them only as an opportunity to make money. I kept one card for personal use, and the rest sat there for real estate purchases. Almost like a home equity loan, even before I bought a home. I bought several pieces of property in my early investing days by taking cash advances from my credit cards, seemingly paying cash to the seller, and then either selling the property for a profit or refinancing the property later to lower my monthly payments. I once had the opportunity to buy a tax parcel of land for $12,000. This was a transaction that had to happen fast. So I grabbed three of my cards, called the number on the back, and pulled out $12,000 in cash in a few hours and was able to buy the land. I think the highest interest rate of all three cards was 10%, which wasn't that bad if you consider the closing costs I would have had to pay with a bank loan. I held on to this property, tightened my budget, and aggressively paid the debt down each month until I paid it off. Then I sold half the property for about four times what I paid for the whole thing, and I still own the other half. The value keeps rising each year, so I'm in no hurry to sell. Assuming the seller's debt. If the seller owes money unrelated to the property, such as a high credit card balance or a car loan, you can offer to assume this debt by making monthly payments. By taking over the seller's debt, you can further entice the seller to sell you the property and accept monthly payments instead of a lump sum, thereby allowing you to buy the property with no money down. If you pursue this approach, you will need to enlist the services of an attorney to protect your interests. Promissory note. A promissory note is a legal document between an individual borrower, the maker, and the lender, the payee. Usually, there is also a provision for collateral that the payee can collect if the maker defaults on payments. When you use seller carryback financing, you're using a promissory note and using the property itself as collateral, although you could use anything of value, such as a car, boat, or a coin collection. Now, if someone owes you money, you will be the payee on a promissory note, which means someone else is paying you a steady monthly income. Because a promissory note represents guaranteed income, you can use your promissory note to purchase property in three ways. Sell the promissory note to someone else at a discounted price. So if you hold a promissory note that says someone owes you $10,000, you could sell it for $7,000, and the new owner of the promissory note would receive payments worth $10,000. You would essentially lose $3,000 on the promissory note, but it might be worth it if selling the note allows you to buy property that could make you a lot more money. Use the promissory note as additional collateral for seller carryback financing. This gives the seller added security of using both the original property and your promissory note to ensure that the seller receives payment in one form or another. Use the promissory note payments to make payments to the seller. This helps convince the seller that you can and will make monthly payments. Promissory notes give you one more way to use your financial assets creatively to help buy property, to make a down payment, or to convince a seller to accept payments in lieu of a lump sum. Distressed properties. Often, as a result of financial stress, owners of distressed properties will be open to considerable discounts in their prices and terms. As I have mentioned, not all distressed properties are run down. A property can be distressed for a variety of reasons, such as illness, death, relocation, or poor property management. However, when any one of these is a factor, the property usually will be run down to some extent because of the owner's mental state or lack of funds to maintain the property. Now, I don't want you to take advantage of people who are facing a tough time. Instead, you may have the opportunity to do the opposite. Take a burden off someone's back and help them solve their problem. Many distressed properties are vacant, with someone still responsible for making mortgage payments, and they are probably not easy to rent due to their condition. So the owner may have a big mortgage to pay on the property every month and may not be receiving any financial benefit from owning that property. If you show up and offer them a way to make money, they'll often jump at your deal. When you research a property, it's important to determine how long it has been vacant and the existing monthly payments. If a property has sat vacant for 6 months with $1,000 monthly payments, those owners have already lost a ton of money, with no prospect of the money drain ending anytime soon. If you come up with an offer that solves their problem using the creative financing techniques you are learning, you may be able to not only purchase the property with no money down, but also get the property at a greatly reduced price. And in most cases, getting the property burden off the seller will be a win-win solution for everyone. Getting inside the owner's head is important because you can find out all sorts of things that will work to your advantage in the negotiations for this type of property. This is also where being a problem solver for the seller and thinking a little differently can pay big dividends. Discounting the paper. The phrase discounting the paper means asking a promissory note holder to take less than the face value of the note they are carrying on a piece of property. The advantage to the promissory note holder is that they get quick cash now. The advantage to the new owner of the promissory note is that they'll eventually earn more money than they paid for the promissory note. A lot of people make a business out of discounting paper. You can see ads in the classified section of your newspaper every day from investors who are seeking people who have carried mortgages on properties they have sold. People who carry notes on properties want to sell them for a variety of reasons, but usually they want cash out of a long-term investment with property buyers. The value of a note to the investor and to the seller depends on a number of things, such as face value. How much was the note originally written for, and what is the remaining balance? Interest rate. What monthly income is the note earning, and are there built-in increases for late payments or non-payment? Term. How long was the note written for, and how much longer will the investor have to wait before realizing the expected yield on the investment? Generally, a longer term and a lower interest rate originally charged to the borrower translates to a lower offer from the investor to purchase that note. A note that will be paid off in 1 year with an interest rate of, say, 15% would not be discounted as severely as a note that still has 10 years remaining and an 8% interest rate. All investors believe in the expression time is money, and the longer they have to wait to realize the return of their investment and the return on their investment, the more likely they take away from the face value of the note they are buying. The return of the investment indicates how long it will take them to recover the amount of money they paid for the investment. The return on the investment indicates how long they have to wait to get their anticipated yield on the investment. Most discounters expect to receive anywhere between 18 to 25% annual return on their investment. Therefore, if a note they were considering buying had been written at 6% interest over a 10-year period, that note would probably be discounted more than 50% from its face value for investors to realize their return on investment over such a long holding period. As a real estate investor, you may be wondering how you can profit from discounted paper. Let's assume you are buying a property that has a $40,000 second mortgage held by the previous owner, along with a $100,000 first mortgage. The property has increased in value to $200,000 due to market appreciation. Your credit is in good shape, so you decide to refinance the property. You can get a decent 30-year fixed-rate mortgage that would reduce your monthly payments. So you arrange a new loan for 80% of the appraised value, or $160,000, $200,000 appraised value times 80%. Before completing the refinancing, you contact the holder of the second mortgage to see whether they would like to receive a lump sum in cash versus continuing to receive payments over time. They are remodeling the house and are in a bit of a jam and need $28,000 in cash right away. You suggest settling the outstanding debt and considering it paid in full if you can pay them $28,000 in the next 2 weeks rather than the entire $40,000 later. They agree and have the paperwork drawn up to cancel the second mortgage upon payment of the $28,000. Congratulations, you just made $12,000 on discounting the note. The first mortgage holder is a tough nut to crack. He has no immediate need for cash and actually prefers receiving his payments over time. He knows what the property is worth and knows that you would never default on your payments. He knows that if he had to foreclose on the property, he would stand to make a lot of money when he resold it, so he isn't interested in discounting his note for immediate cash. Fortunately, the note has no prepayment penalty, so nothing is stopping you from refinancing the first mortgage. You call your lender and give them the go-ahead. Here is the result. Refinance with the new 30-year first mortgage, $200,000 appraised value times 80%, which is $160,000. Pay off the $100,000 first mortgage, $160,000 minus $100,000 equals $60,000. Pay off the $40,000 second mortgage as negotiated with the discount, $60,000 minus $28,000, the discounted cost, equals $32,000. Cash in your pocket after the refinance equals $32,000. Congratulations, you just put $32,000 in your pocket. So now what are you going to do? That's right, you will use that money as your down payment on your next property purchase. I still consider this technique no money down, because you will use the equity from this property to purchase another property. Conclusion. As you can see, you can find money to invest in real estate in dozens of ways, from traditional loans to private lenders to leveraging your own assets. Don't let lack of money stop you from investing in real estate. The secret to real estate investing is to find a way to make money from a piece of property and then figure out how to buy that property. I hope you can put some of these creative financing techniques to use in completing successful real estate investments. Find the right property, use the right financing, and rent or sell for maximum profit.